together. All right, Saskia, your energy, your own energy journey, can you just talk to me a little bit about where that started?
It started right back in the 1980s when I was sitting in science classes, and I remember vividly being shown the now famous hockey stick curve, which shows the build-up of CO2 in the atmosphere and how since the Industrial Revolution that concentration of CO2 has whooshed up as a result of man's activities on the planet. And I remember myself and my classmates being incensed looking at this impact that we were having, and as a country being just so cross that governments and companies could let this happen. I then went off and studied science and wound up working in international development. And while I was working at Oxfam, becoming more and more aware of the impact that climate change was having here and now on some of the most vulnerable people on the planet, and in particular being shown a photograph of how much a glacier in the Andes had retreated over the course of 20 years, and being told that this was particularly important, not just because of the wildlife, and you know, we were always brought up thinking about the impact this climate change would have on future generations or on polar bears in the Arctic, but that here were people who depended on this glacial ice melt for their drinking water, and when this glacier went, there would be no water left for the people in the valley. So it wasn't just this future distant threat, it was something that was going to have a real impact on people living now and some of the most vulnerable people. But it was only when I was working on a small local community project and I had my carbon footprint taken that I suddenly realised this wasn't all about the impact of other people and big companies and the responsibility of government. I looked at my carbon footprint and realised what an impact myself and my family were having. And I could see the amount of CO2, the tons of CO2 that we were personally responsible. And it was from things that I hadn't even connected. I was stupidly hadn't connected, like a weekend off to Barcelona, which was, you know, great fun, but that was sitting there, a massive slice of my carbon footprint coming from a fun weekend away. That was the first time I really realised that not only was climate change something that was real, was affecting people now, but I had a responsibility and was in part responsible for it.
And then you became involved with some local projects here in Oxfordshire.
Yes, so the community where I live in West Oxford, really lucky, a fantastic group of people in our local community, very environmentally minded. And there was a project at the time to see whether or not it was possible to encourage people to reduce their own personal carbon footprint by 10%. And so that's why I'd had my carbon footprint measured. And sure enough, we did it. We found 38 households. We learned a lot about how our personal lifestyle choices impacted on our own carbon footprint and what different actions or options were available to us to take control and ownership of that, and it was the choices that we made could help reduce that. But within that community group, we were aware that we were all doing this as volunteers, and if we wanted to do more like this, we were going to need funding to support it. And that's where the idea came up of using renewable energy, so putting solar panels up, which we would be able to sell the electricity to generate not just renewable energy and reduce the carbon footprint of the community in that way through green electricity, but also generate an income stream that we could then reinvest into further carbon cuts by supporting community action like the household projects.
And how did that then develop into what became the Low Carbon Hub?
So we joined forces with a number of other community groups working around the city of Oxford, because we were getting more and more people interested in the way that we were developing this project, where in particular with solar panels, we would persuade a local building owner to host panels on their roof. They would get discounted electricity, but we would own the panels and we'd raise some money for the panels through local investment. And then that surplus, some would go back to the investors, but the remainder would then be used. And people found this as a really exciting way of generating community interest around a green issue and an opportunity for people to take local action on a really global issue that was concerning a lot of people. So we were getting lots of approaches from people saying, how do you do this? We'd love to learn more. Can you tell us how we're doing it? And we were ending up spending so much time explaining and sharing our model and experiences with people that we were running out of time to do any more in our own community. So by joining forces with a number of other communities and with a grant from the EU, an intelligent energy grant, and support from the local councils, we were able to set up the Low Carbon Hub, which is now supporting community energy action across Oxfordshire to a very similar model.
Oh, so the council were quite helpful, instrumental in developing this?
Yeah, we've been really helpful with working in partnership with not only the local councils, but a number of local businesses, schools, and so partnership, working in partnership has been really at the heart of the way that the hub's working. So all of our host organisations, whether they're businesses, or they are the Oxford Bus Company were the very first people to host a roof for us. Lots of schools around the county hosting projects. And then also we're working very closely with local community groups, low carbon groups across the county. Oxford is really rich in low carbon community groups, rumoured to be the most dense population of community groups anywhere on the planet. And we now have 28 of them are shareholders, as community shareholders, and so having an input and say into the way that the hub operates.
Why do you think that people from the county have embraced this low energy, renewable, cooperative future?
I think in part it's about giving people an opportunity to take tangible action on what is a global issue. And there are a lot of different ways in which people can get involved. We've got 650 investors in the hub, so that's individual people in the main, a couple of organisations as well, but the vast majority are individuals who've given us money. We've got £2 million invested now, which has paid for the assets and the renewable energy. So part of it is about, you know, here's a way of making your funds do good, so investing for good. But also it's there are other ways of getting involved. So the grants that we then give out from some of the surpluses are back to those community groups who might be helping a local village hall become more energy efficient, or it might be setting up programmes to help local households reduce their own carbon footprint. So there's lots of different ways that people can get involved, and it really is a network of people working together to make that happen.
And around the county, you've been involved in 36 different projects.
We've got 36 different installations now and a couple more in the pipeline, including a large hydro at Sanford-on-Thames. There's already one community-owned hydro on the Thames here in the heart of Oxford at Oisney that a number of us who are involved in the hub worked on in a voluntary basis. This will be about 10 times the size, and it's been able to again build on that learning. It's where being able to share what we've done in one project and being able to support another community do something similar, but in this case even bigger, is really exciting.
And does that knowledge sharing extend beyond the boundaries of Oxfordshire?
Yep, so we try and offer help and support in a number of ways. We operate a help desk, so that any organisation who's interested in community energy can contact us. We offer grants to community groups, low carbon community groups within Oxfordshire. But we're also really happy to share our experiences and the knowledge that we've built up with any community group across the country who wants to pick our brains. And we're also learning from other people all the time. It's very much a two-way process. We've also found that we've had a lot of interest from academics and universities who are very keen to learn about this particular business model, including sort of a lot of international interest to try and understand how this community model is something that they can learn more about and start comparing with the ways people are approaching things all around the world.
And you seem to have a very strategic approach to it, looking on your website, and a manifesto as well. It's a political sort of thing. But what does that come from?
I think we have to be realistic that in terms of the impact that we as a small organisation can have in terms of actual carbon saving is always going to be a drop in the ocean. It's not insignificant, but it's compared to the scale of the issue that we're having to face with climate change, it's going to have to influence in ways beyond just the carbon savings that we can achieve. And so we're going to have to see how we can use our learning and our direct experience to inform and to influence people on a much wider political scale and the way that other organisations are operating if we're going to have a really big impact.
And looking back over your time working at the Low Carbon Hub, what are the main achievements that you feel most proud of over the past few years?
And I think for me, it's that sense of what can be achieved when lots of people get together. And when the number of times you feel like you're going to hit a wall or a barrier and something can't be done, and somebody out there goes and helps you unlock that barrier. It really is all about people making a difference, and it's that cumulative action. So I struggle to think about an individual example, but it is just looking back and saying, wow, this is what a group of people can get together and make happen. And say we've now got almost £2 million of investment from people mostly from across the county. We've got 36 installations and they're generating, that's over 2 megawatt of installation already out there generating, and once hydro comes on stream, we are beginning to see some quite large numbers, and it's something that's going to be producing benefit for the next 20 plus years, because that generation of the green electricity will continue to drive carbon cuts directly, but that income over the next 20 years is something that we can keep on investing in future projects. So that's an amazing legacy to leave to whoever is going to be working with the hub over the next 2 decades.
And the projects that you've already developed, are they mainly PV projects?
All the projects to date that the hub own are PV projects, yes, and they're all rooftop mounted.
And you touched on, I think you mentioned fuel poverty. What is that something you are looking to address as well?
At the moment, a lot of our focus has been on the powering up, on the increasing the generation, in part because that's how we're going to increase our income stream. But powering down and how you increase energy efficiency going forward is something that's of real interest and importance to us. If we're going to achieve an 80% carbon cut by 2050, you've got to be doing both in tandem. And as part of that, the more energy efficiency that you can drive, then you're going to have opportunities there to tackle fuel poverty. It's proved really hard to work, particularly on a domestic energy efficiency front. I think there are a lot of people struggling out there. We've had the collapse of the Green Deal. I would love to see that as an area, and with particularly if you're able to do it in a way which helps people who are the most vulnerable in this country to health issues or to issues related to poverty, and with fuel being such a major part, the cost of fuel being a major part of that, that would be wonderful.
And you talked about the ambition of Oxford as a people's power station.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about what that actually means?
So we've got a project on at the moment called the People's Power Station, where we're trying to map renewable installations across Oxfordshire, so that we can show what that cumulative effect of individual people putting solar panels on their roofs or different organisations, and getting a sense of what together we're able to do, because this really is about a grassroots movement of people. So that's what the People Power Station is about. It's showing how that should pick a different word, showing what that cumulative effect of lots of people taking action can be. At the moment, again, we're focused on generation, but we'd also like to start mapping activity that we know which has led to energy efficiency, and so cuts and reductions through improvements to the fabric of buildings, for example.
I suppose it makes people feel empowered because of the collective impacts that they can have rather than just doing something in isolation. When you are engaging with people, how are you finding their perceptions of energy, their energy uses and renewable energy? Is it something they've been receptive to? You're coming up against a lot of barriers when you're talking about changing the way people get their energy?
There's very few people, if you were to say to them, would you like an opportunity to reduce your fuel bill? There are very few people who'd say no to that. When you're talking about energy reduction, part of the issue is how you can do it in a way that's affordable for people. There's always a hassle factor. I think anyone who's had to clear a loft to put in loft insulation will understand that what on the face of it seems like a no-brainer actually involves a huge amount of energy and hassle. Also knowing you're often confronted with a lot of different options and knowing what's the right option for you as an individual. There's no sort of set best way to do this. And I think also helping people understand that I think a lot of the focus on energy reduction is about structural changes to buildings, to the physical changes, whether it's insulation, and they're all really important, but you can also achieve huge savings through behaviour change. So when I very first got involved in the programme and I looked at my carbon footprint, half of that was flights. And so I cut my carbon footprint for my family overnight by saying, right, we're really going to think long and hard before we step on an aeroplane again. So that for us was an easy decision to make. Other people may make different choices about how they want to reduce that. We also reduced the energy consumption of our home by 50%, just by, again, nothing in terms of insulation, just about the way that we ran the boiler, about the way that we remembered to turn lights off and switching to low energy light bulbs. So some really basic changes made some very big impacts. You need to see both those behaviour change opportunities for people, which are low or no cost, as alongside being supported alongside those structural changes to properties, which is what people often think about.
Looking to the future, and you've got children and the world that they're going to live in, what's your vision of an energy future in Oxfordshire and wider and the global perspective, I suppose, as well?
We've got an option, haven't we, in front of us. We've got two very different paths we could go down. If we don't take the threat of climate change seriously, if we don't start taking action, then they could be facing really quite a horrendous future, to my mind. And my kids are very much in that privileged group who have got the ability to move. They'll have the resources and they're in a country that has some ability to adapt. When I think about other children growing up in other countries, particularly in the developing world, who don't have that luxury of migration, who are far more vulnerable. And I think there is a chance for a really bleak future for very many millions of people. But we do have choices and we've got options and things. There are decisions that we can make now that could, I think, create a very different future. We've already seen now what the difference renewable energy can do in terms of the energy mix just for our own country, and there's still plenty more of potential there. We need to start thinking about the way we use energy in a very different way, and energy balancing, where it comes from, how we use our energy. There's so much potential out there for change, and change which isn't about hair shirts and hardship. It's some of those co-benefits I was talking about generating energy, which is being reinvested into the communities, my local community back in West Oxford, there's a sense, a real sense of community cohesion, a lot of which has come out from, you know, this working together on joint projects. So there's a lot of positivity and benefits if we can help through more energy efficient households, give people a better living environment, improve people's health. There's, you know, there's a lot of positive things that can come outside of tackling this global issue.
And from a social perspective, I suppose it brings people together who may not have known their neighbours, or and creates a real, helps to create a real sense of community. Have you found that at all?
I mean, I've certainly seen that in my own community back in West Oxford. We, as a community, also worked together on that first hydro on the Thames at Osney Lock, and there are 200 people, around half of which live within a mile of that site, who now co-own that. And there's a real sense of pride when you see that turbine turning and knowing that, you know, you own a little tip of that turbine and that it's going to be there generating electricity for the local houses, and also for the, you know, generating electricity that's going to be sold and benefiting the local community for the, well, in that case, for the next 40 years.
It's and your vision for the next 40 years for Oxfordshire, where does the low carbon, I suppose in the short term, where does the low carbon hub go now, and what you're trying to achieve, and then longer term, what do you, where do you see it being in well, when your kids are, you know, in their 40s or 50s, say?
The as you may be aware, there have been some very significant cuts to the feed-in tariff, and our original business model here at the hub was to, as I say, we put solar panels on people's roofs. The host of that panel gets benefit. So, for example, a local school will get benefit in terms of discounted electricity. The investors who paid and put in the capital to make that project happen were getting a modest interest payment of around 5%. And it was also creating the surplus for the community benefit. And it was about a three-way split. The huge, very rapid cuts in the feed-in tariff, which haven't quite been matched by a reduction in the cost of solar panels, has means that we're now having to look at new business models about how we can continue to grow our portfolio of generating assets in a way that's also going to be able to support that community investment and also support those further carbon cuts through the community benefit income. So we're, at the moment, we're still looking to see what is that business model going forward. Because we know that there's a potential out there in terms of roofs, and there's certainly a huge amount of work that we could be spending that community benefit on, and particularly in developing our powering down and energy efficiency work.
Yeah, it's slightly uncertain, isn't it, at the minute, what the future holds, really. I mean, what's your hope and your vision, if you put all that aside, what would you like to see?
I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if every roof, every river, if, you know, the local woodlands were managed in such a way that they were all providing fuel and energy for the county, if the power stations for the county weren't these single centralised power stations, but it really was the rooftops, the rivers, the local woods, and it's something that we'd have energy security as well, because it was something that would be, you know, all local to us. It's a huge amount of our energy is currently imported, so the more that we can generate and own ourselves, then the more of the benefits from those sales are going back into the local community where they're based. So, you know, that would be a great vision. And if it's in community ownership, then people, you'll be able to build up a connection to people, to where their power's coming from. I think back to, you know, the days when you used to have your coal cellar. You knew exactly how much energy you were using because you could see the amount of coal going down in that coal cellar, and you were very much connected to when your fire, you know, would you be able to keep your fire going, because you could see how much coal was in there and you knew exactly how much each coal delivery cost. Whereas when we're now paying for electricity on direct debits, it's also distant. It's very hard to keep a track and a real sense of, oh, I've had the tumble dryer on all afternoon. What does that actually mean in terms of my energy use?
Mm. So people's relationship with energy has changed, yeah, by doing what you're doing and bringing the community aspect of it back. It's reconnecting people in some ways,
yeah,
with energy,
absolutely.
I suppose, yeah.
And that's the first step of just waking people up and reminding them where their power comes from. But you've then got to be able to build on that and help give people the information that they need to make choices about how they can reduce their own energy consumption and remind them why collectively it's important.
Excellent.
Is that all right?
Okay.